type of experience. But they did sacrifice greatly for what's now known as Brown v. Board of Education. We would really be remiss and selfish if we didn't make certain we told the whole story. So we have to. Mm-hmm. We have to always speak the truth.
Well, I want to thank you for taking your time. I also want to thank you for your service to our nation and to this cause. It's something that has to continue. It's a message that must continue, and hopefully at some point we will stop being a nation of cowards.
Thank you.
And my thanks to Cheryl Brown Henderson for taking her time this morning on Education Matters. So when you look at the Brown v. Board case, you are looking at a moment so powerful. It is the equivalent, as Juan Williams has said, of the Big Bang in our solar system. He goes on to say that it led to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It led to sit-ins and bus rides and freedom marches. And even today, as we argue about affirmative action in colleges and graduate schools, the power of Brown versus the Board of Education continues to stir the nation. For Education Matters, here on WGTD HD, I'm your host, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Andrea's in Kenosha, welcoming author Michael Schumacher Saturday, November 26th from 1 to 3 p.m., signing his newest book, Torn in Two, The Sinking of the Daniel J. Murrell and One Man's Survival on the Open Sea.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Well, good morning and welcome to Community Matters. This is Jim McClure, the Walworth County correspondent for WGTD. And in the 2 years now that I've been doing Community Matters, there is a unique group of people who have been on this show three times. And this gentleman is going to be joining them, Community Matters is very pleased to welcome Dave Brettel, the county administrator of Walworth County. And welcome back, Dave.
Well, thanks, Jim. I didn't know I was a three-timer here, but I know it comes around every year, kind of like the dentist. And
it does, and count me lazy, but the only other three-timer it works across the hall from you, Nate Bond, the Veteran Services officer.
I can see Nate Meritz three times on here probably, but I'm hoping for a blazer or something. Is there a...
Actually, at the end when we're done, I will hand you a WGTT sticker, a list of our opera, which occurs right after us. So generally, you're done when the fat lady sings. But you're going to have to wait till either your fifth appearance or year five before you get the monogram shower robe and the... secret handshake.
All right. Well, I will. I'll count on that.
So. All right. Well, Dave, you're always a welcome guest because, from my perspective, 30 years of reporting and sitting in more than a few county government meetings, your straight shooting nature, your grasp of the issues, and the fascinating thing that we covered when we first met you 2 years ago, that you do two jobs at once. Both county administrator and handling the legal matters for the county as well, or that oversight as the counsel for the board, and your good humor. I just really appreciate it. And the last time through, you were kind enough to bring our brand new sheriff and old time undersheriff, Kurt Picknell, where we discussed public safety on the very day that San Bernardino, California, had a county employees meeting shot up literally that hour.
I remember that well.
Yeah, and as we talked about then, we never know. That fatal day may still come when you and the sheriff are standing in front of microphones from around the state, around the country, saying something awful has happened. And there's just so many things on your plate that you have to be cognizant of. And what better time for the first time in our three get-togethers than instead of after the budget is already getting set in for the new year, but we're at the point where the budget has been proposed, there's been a county hearing, and things have gone through. So now we're talking more about what's to come than what has been, and I'm looking forward to that. Can you take us through, in addition to the many hats you wear, you're also a newspaper columnist for the four or five magazines and newspapers. Can you take us through that process that you described in one of your columns, how, you know, the Dave Brettel life is such that come a certain part of the year, you're sitting down to write the budget and think about it. How does this come to be?
Sure. No, I appreciate that introduction. It makes me wish I would have prepared for the interview here today. But
I didn't either, so that makes it quite good. Spontaneous is wonderful.
There's a couple of points, you know, that you had raised in that introduction. Thank you, by the way. But you know, one is the importance of outreach to the public, and that's why I'm happy to be here today and to take any opportunity that I can to get the word out. And I think we've got a great county and a great story to tell. And any time I get a chance to do that, I will, including through the columns. And so, that process. It's interesting because it's a cycle, and I think we're talking about the budget or thinking about the budget, certainly I think more than probably private sector organizations, you know, we get one opportunity to tax, which is probably one too many for a lot of taxpayers, but we've got to get it right the first time, and so we try to spend as much time as we can preparing for that. So we're at the ninth inning here with this particular budget, which usually starts early spring, you know, maybe about March, the departments start pulling their budgets together, and they bring it to me in summer, and then I release it right after Labor Day, which is one of the earlier budget releases, at least in the state, I think.
That was basically my impression, if I recall your article, is that other husbands and fathers are laying out the steaks on the grill, and you're laying out the accounts receivable usually for your Labor Day weekend, aren't you?
Yeah, that's my whining column that I do every year about
it's a good whine.
Lamenting about how I am laboring on Labor Day. And actually this year I did have a great Labor Day, and they made me hand in my budget letter before I left on Friday, because it happened, I think, that we were releasing it on a Tuesday, and I have put there's a couple of ladies who pull all of it together, do all the charts and collating, and they knew that with our board meeting on Tuesday afternoon that I wouldn't have a prayer, to get it out. So they made me hand it in on Friday, and I resented it at the time, but I really appreciated it when they made me do it. And there's a serious side, though, to getting the budget out as early as we do, and, you know, I think it creates as much transparency as we can. And, you know, to our supervisors, I kind of live and breathe this stuff for months. But for them, you know, they're looking at a $150 million plus spending plan, and they've got, you know, about 8 weeks to do that. So anything that we can do to get that in their hands as early as possible, I think, is a real service to them. And, you know, to the public, you know, what budgets are sometimes boring or esoteric, but what gets funded gets done. So it's a real integral policy document, and so if we don't include money for a particular program, chances are there's not going to be a lot done on it. So it helps them too. We try to get the word out and encourage them to participate in the process.
Mm-hmm. And as this airs on Saturday, November 12th, this morning, at least we didn't have you here on the 13th. You've been through the board process. You've been approved. So we've got a pretty good idea of where we're going here. Help me understand the difference for Walworth County about how, in one sense, there's a raise in the levy, but in another sense, there's a slight decrease in the property tax, unless I have that backwards.
No, you've got it right, and that's one of the great mysteries of taxation. And actually, we've got a confusing process here in the state of Wisconsin, because both stories are right. The mill rate has dropped, but the tax levy has increased. So I'm at the point where I'm candid enough with reporters, or especially young reporters, and they're all younger than I am now.
And me.
Well, you're not younger, Jim. No, you probably are. I'll explain. You know, a lot of administrators or public officials will portray this the most favorable to them. You know, for example,
right.
I were to sit here and say, well, the tax rate or the mill rate is down, you know, and then the headline runs, taxes decreased, taxes slashed, or something like that. Well, that's not the case. You know, in our county, we're raising taxes. It happens to be by a relatively small amount, 0.3%. But as long as that tax levy increase is less than, the percentage is less than how much property value has increased in the county, then the mill rate actually drops. And I go through a lot of tortured different analogies to try to explain this to people. It's kind of like dividing a dinner check,
right.
You know, among four people. You know, how do you do that? And in Wisconsin, we divide that dinner check, which is a tax bill, by how much property a person owns. And so the person who owns the most taxable real property pays the largest share of that dinner bill. So the check has gone up from 2016 budget, but again, by I think a pretty modest increase here, as modest as we could make it.
Uh-huh. And but there was a drop of somehow the figure 20 cents comes to mind with property value, or 20%. It was a little bit down for what you would pay per thousand on your there was some basic figure that involved a decrease, although the levy was up.
The mill rate has decreased in. Just chinking a look here. I brought all my books that I probably won't get a chance to look through, but it's down slightly. Our equalized value had increased, so the value of all the taxable property in the county had increased by about a little over 1% this past. Let's see, we were at 2% increase. So the increase in the tax was below that. So the mill rate drops and the tax levy goes up.
Right. And at the risk of oversimplifying, the one source of revenue compensates for the other. So the net value is that depending on what headline you write, Walworth County is holding its own financially, and people aren't necessarily worse off than they were a year ago or 2 years ago. And I imagine with the way the economy has swung since 2008 and previous recessions, that's good news indeed. Other good news that I heard, you and I a couple weeks back, wearing my county correspondent hat, did a brief preview story. And the sense that I got from that, Dave, is that despite the fact that our physical structure has greatly built up, there's the wonderful new complex on County NN of all these new buildings that have been built over the past decade or two, that you're able to budget for a new need for a human services building, and there's been enough foresight in that you're able to add to the kingdom without necessarily bankrupting the treasury and keeping things level, not going into deficit any more than one needs to.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, and I think just on the tax levy, and again, you know, we want to be transparent because it grates on me when the headline reads, you know, taxes decrease, and it's extremely rare, almost in any unit of government, that taxes go down, right?
So, right.
But here, I think from our 2011 budget to 2017 budget, the overall levy had increased by 1.55%, so 1.5% during that six-year period. So that's about a quarter of 1% per year during that period. So I think we've tried to be as prudent as we could in terms of holding the line on taxes. And as to the infrastructure, we have in the works a plan to replace our Health and Human Services building, which is a large capital item, as you might imagine. I think we're over $24 million that we're projecting for that, but we're going to do so without the need to borrow for it. So we've got cash on hand in order to build that. That comes on the heels of a maintenance facility that we just completed for our Public Works Department, which was in the neighborhood of about $6 million that we were also able to complete without borrowing. So if everything goes according to Hoyle, we should be able to call our last bonds in 2018. So hopefully then it's up to the board to make that final decision, but be debt-free at that point, which would be a nice place to be, I think.
Before I get into some issues like growth in Walworth County, which of course figures into how many nickels and dimes you have to forecast with, I've got to say, as a resident, well done, and who's to blame for when I go out to the Judicial Center to cover a court, when I drop by Human Services to check on, flu shots, or when I need any government service out on that far campus on the west side of on the east side of Elkhorn, past the high school. Who put the new signs up? Because it used to be the most intimidating thing to drive out there, and now you've got these big, beautiful California style, couldn't miss them. You know, if you drove into a side of a barn, light up at night, signs that say, here's the court, here's the sheriff's office, here's Human Services, here's the hospital.
I'd like to take credit for it, but I'll tell you, it's a real smart engineer that we have by the name of Joe Kroll, who came up with that scheme. He actually probably missed his calling and should have been an interior decorator or something, because he does has a really nice touch with that. And I appreciate you saying that, because we've got addresses on the buildings now, which we didn't. And you kind of turn the clock back about 20 years ago or so, and it was kind of like a third world country out there in terms of the facilities that we had. It was just perplexing, and especially the building where new hires would show up, our human resources building that had the whole attic infested with bats, and the wind was blowing through all these old buildings. We had our zoning department was in an old nursing home, and they had bedpan washers right in offices. And this isn't, you know, necessarily that unusual for counties, but
right.
You know, what we were trying to do is not, you know, not have a grandiose campus or palatial offices for folks, but we tried to reinforce the message that there's a cost to doing business in facilities like that, and they're incredibly expensive to heat and cool. The floor layout is such that you might need two receptionists instead of one, which is an expensive cost. And they were not very accommodating to the public, so constantly in need of repair. We'd have, you know, every other day the phone would ring with some, you know, major problem, something that broke down. So part of the idea of replacing these facilities was efficiency, and I really think we've achieved that. You know, the Health and Human Services building was actually in the process of being remodeled, or they were finishing it just when I started in the county 16 years ago. So that, you know, you could look at that and say, well, you know, it was originally an inpatient hospital if you've ever spent time there. And you can see the patient's rooms and the wide corridors. And that's part of, you know, on the outside, I think the building looks certainly reasonable and presentable, but it's a very inefficient floor plan for the clinics and offices that we run there now. We don't run a hospital. And the layout is such from a security standpoint and a staffing standpoint, it isn't efficient. So that's the next in the queue. And really with that, I think we've upgraded virtually all the buildings in the county, which I think will serve taxpayers well for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to paint a visual picture for people outside the Walworth County, if you're in Racine County or Kenosha County, you know, this will be a very interesting show for you, too, to, you know, make the comparisons, because Walworth County is a little bit everywhere. It has its urban areas and industrial parks, and it has its resources. Our version of Lake Michigan is the lakes themselves. And, you know, this very interesting mix of half agriculture, half tourist urban. But Walworth County, a lot of people associate with Lake Geneva, beautiful downtown tourist mecca, and don't realize that the county seat is actually in Elkhorn, which I think first achieved national standing in the 1950s as the picturesque Christmas card USA. And it's definitely that. The downtown looks like a Hollywood movie set with the big giant lawn quadrangle and the beautiful buildings around it. And then you have what was the primary county government center, built in 1960, and you can literally see John F. Kennedy or Richard Nixon. You can, with the architecture, you can picture them campaigning out front there. Along with the plaque that said JFK was here or whatever, that a lot of towns. But it's a beautiful building, well-maintained. I mean, it looks like it was built yesterday. And that's where Mr. Brettel, the administrator, and other key offices are. And then around the corner down the bend, you have a lovely 19th-century courthouse that now serves another purpose. And now we're in the purviews of the budget we're talking about and in the services that are provided by Walworth to our citizens, this campus on the growing eastern side of town that is kind of a modern but very utilitarian. I mean, it does not have Trump Tower gold faucets and doors, but state-of-the-art prison, judicial center, human services, other departments, public works. And, Dave, as part of your job of keeping it all going, keeping it all solvent, comes the area of, I imagine, intergovernmental cooperation, especially when part of your county is shared with another county like Whitewater. How do you get all these people under the same tent and working together as a team to provide a county budget?
Right. It's an interesting, you know, process. I think sometimes, you know, the public just hears about local officials feuding. You know, that seems to be the headlines. And there certainly are, you know, sources of disagreement, I think, among the different units of government. You know, towns and cities sometimes have adverse interests when a city wants to annex land from a town. But, it, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of cooperation that takes place in the county. And I really think it should be emphasized, and it was just a week ago I was at two meetings that try to coordinate the different units of government in the county, and one was an initiative that the county started, which is called the Intergovernmental Cooperation Council, and that brings together the chief elected officials from every town, city, and village, as well as our county board chair, just to talk about issues of common interest. And I usually plan the agenda, and sometimes I do my best, but, you know, sometimes the topics maybe aren't the most interesting. This last one we had was a very good meeting, but it's nice for me to see that the officials will come to that yet, and if for no other reason, then I think just maybe the time before and after the meeting, well, they'll converse with each other and get to know each other, and it's easier to, you know, throw bombs at each other when you don't have that personal connection. And when you sit next to someone and know them and talk with them, I think that helps to open up the communication. So that's been, I think, one initiative that's really worked. And then another meeting that I was at just this last week, the towns get together quarterly, mm-hmm. Towns Unit Meeting, it's called. And we were in Richmond Township on for an evening meeting. And again, They will get together, compare notes, you know, best practices, legislative issues that are of common interest to them. So I think there's more common ground than people realize, and certainly more common ground than differences between the different units of government. One of the issues that really the county is getting involved in, which is a service that we don't provide, but is fire and EMS. And that is pretty much a volunteer-based service, although there's different models throughout the county. But providing that fire and emergency medical service is the statutory responsibility of cities, towns, and villages. But they've encountered some problems in some cases with being able to get enough volunteers to be able to staff that mm-hmm. important function. And so earlier this year, they had reached out to the county and said, well, can you, you know, help bring folks together to study this issue and come up with some solutions? So that's a proposal that's in the budget as well, to put a study committee together to try to figure out, again, what will work. And you know, you talk about how do you bring people together, and the one lesson I guess I've learned in Walworth County is you don't force anybody to do anything. You know, you hopefully, I think people, when they see something that works and that when there's a reason to change, a good reason to change, they will. But I think one thing that's ineffective is to say, you know, to governments at least, well, you shall do this or this is in your best interest. The lasting change has always been things that people have come to their own realization that they make sense.
You're listening to Community Matters on WGTD, your gateway to public radio, heard on 91.1 FM in Racine and Kenosha, and 101.7 in Elkhorn, and 103.3 in Lake Geneva in Walworth County, where our guest is County Administrator Dave Brettel, who's many tasks include putting together the county budget. We're going through a lot of these separate items and also the general nature of the county itself and growth in Walworth County. How does that manifest itself when you have this dual nature of lots of agriculture balanced by bedroom communities anchored by tourism?
The growth question is one that's very fascinating to me and very important. And boy, you know, where do you begin with it? There's nothing new under the sun, I guess. You know, for one thing.
Well, did you get enough growth to get the till filled up again? I guess is the start of it, or the industrial parks, the tourism, the room taxes, and the whatever revenue one gets from the corn growing. How are we doing there?
Yeah, I mean, that's an important component of it. And I think, you know, the answer to that is yes, because we're keeping the doors open for another year. But it certainly is something that's starting to cause a little bit of concern looking forward. And the, you know, the funding component of growth is an important one to local government in Wisconsin. And really the tax system is based on growth, and there's always been growth. And so you look at our budget, for example, and under levy caps that have been passed by the state legislature, our growth in our increase in our levy is limited to the growth of new construction that takes place in the county. So if nobody built anything new in the county, we would not have the ability to raise taxes at all. And, you know, at one level you could say, hey, that's a good thing, because then the tax bill won't go up. It'll stay the same. But the cost of providing the services rarely goes down. You know, we have to pay our heat and light bill. We pay third-party contractors. We have labor costs. We buy, you know, everything from gasoline to, you know, to asphalt. And so those costs keep going up. So when you're talking about really a flat revenue source, then you're ultimately talking about cutting or reducing the level of services. But so that's, you know, growth, that's one component of growth, is that it enters into our budget. You know, there's other components as well. And, you know, the one thing that I've always tried to underscore, at least, is that the slowdown in growth in our county has been dramatic. And, you know, you look at a time when I started here, well, in the 90s at least, we were the fourth fastest growing county in the state of Wisconsin.
My goodness.
And at that point, you know, we were adding new residents at the clip of about 1,700 per year that would move into the county. And even during the decade of the 2000s, and that was really the time that I was here, 2000 to 2010, we were ninth in terms of growth statewide. So we were still well ahead of the curve, you know, for the state average. You know, since the 2010 census now, and 2010 to date, 2016 was the last estimate that was released, the county added just 365 residents during that period of time.
So, and wasn't a significant amount of those in Whitewater?
That's correct. You're an avid reader of Dave Brettle columns, I think. I might have had it in there.
Yep.
Yes, the majority of that was in Whitewater, which you could speculate. I mean, they've had increased enrollment and their county residents as well, but that's where that growth occurred. So you go from adding 1,700 residents per year to 61 residents per year, and that has a pretty dramatic impact on other segments of the economy, you know, in terms of the demand for housing and housing prices and, you know, residents or folks that are available to work, the workforce. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just spent about an hour talking to a reporter on this topic today, and I don't pretend to have all the answers to it. I understand the component and how it impacts county government finances, but there's the other aspects to this are probably more significant, and I was encouraging him to you know, reach out to some people and get their perspective on it. You know, the other one I mentioned that nothing's new. You know, this issue has always been kind of a Jekyll and Hyde, or maybe that's a bad analogy. But
I called the county area. I think I called you bipolar 2 years ago.
You did. So. I remember that. I was trying to avoid that one, actually, Jim. But no, I mean, but the point is that people have. You know, there's always been this idea of folks moving here for a lot of good things, you know, the quality of life and good schools and affordable housing and large lots and open space and amenities and all these great things. But then, you know, the idea has been we'll close the door, you know, after I get here. And so that issue has always been with us. But there's some, you know, there's always been a balance, I guess, that's occurred and an equilibrium that's been reached. So this is something that we're, you know, definitely keeping our eye on. And, you know, from my perspective, I kind of take maybe a little bit different view of government than some of my peers would, and at least in county administrators, which is I don't know that, you know, what we can, I know what we can do, which is we can have create a reasonable tax environment, we can have high quality public services. Those are things that are in our control. To say that, you know, I'm going to bring 10,000 jobs into the county or something like that is something that I don't believe is ultimately in my control or in the control of local government. So we do, you know, we're cognizant of what's going on. We do our part, play our role. But there's some larger, you know, issues here that I think will play out and that we need to be aware of.
Let's talk of two of those larger issues we have in the 14 minutes or so we have left. Transportation has got to be a big one. It's not the 1960s anymore. You can't hop on. I imagine there was a nice little bus that went from town to town in the Geneva Lakes area, or ways for Elkhorn to hook up with Lake Geneva. The train, as you know, you could walk down to Williams Bay or Como or Lake Geneva, and you would be in Chicago on the train. First of all, the issue of senior and disabled. Let's talk about VIP services. I see that. I drive by, and there's this at about 7, 8 o'clock on a Monday morning, you just see this vast fleet move out of hotel-sized courtesy vans and vehicles. And it's an interesting infrastructure that we have. VIP Services is I guess a semi-private contractor. How do we help seniors get to medical appointments and around through that service?
Sure. No, you covered some ground there, and you know it's interesting. You talk about years ago the different options that were available for transportation, and I folks will tell me about the bus that ran through Lyons and other buses, and
my goodness,
it's just interesting that you mentioned it, because I had one of my coworkers, Michael Cotter, who's been a lifelong East Troy resident, took the Interurban the other day, and that's a neat thing. It's still up there. It runs to the Elegant Farmer, but it's the old electrified railroad. And
you could be a commuter to Milwaukee right from East Troy.
That's what he said. He said, how cool would that be to be able to go to the Riverside Theater, which was one of the runs that they made, have dinner, go to a show, and come back. And, of course, now that line is considerably shorter, but it things tend to come full circle, and a couple of programs I guess that the county has been very interested in lately, the first being senior and disabled transportation. And so that was a service that has been available for many years in the county. It used to be run through our Health and Human Services Department, so we actually owned the vans and dispatched the vans and provided rides under a grant from the state of Wisconsin for folks who were disabled or senior, which is defined as age 60 or above. And we would utilize this grant plus quite a few local tax dollars that we would levy and provide rides. There was a copay that was involved, still is. And several years ago, really our county board chair was instrumental in this, but looked at the statistics, and absolutely no fault of HHS. We had done some, just because of labor costs, and we had downsized the number of drivers and tried to make some changes. But she had made the point that we really should be providing more rides rather than fewer rides to the seniors. And it's great to say, it's kind of a double whammy, where the state had strongly encouraged counties, including ourselves, to reduce the size of our nursing home, which we did, under the theory that seniors would be happier in their house, which is true to a point if you're not a prisoner in your house, right?
Right.
And so, that was her point, is with the population aging, and it is aging significantly quickly, and I'm aging.
I was going to say, speak for yourself. I intend to live forever, right?
You look at that, those figures, and I don't have them with me, but I think it was something like in 15 years I had looked at some statistics from the Southeast Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission. We were going to add the equivalent of, I think it was 5,000 residents that will be 85 or older. So that would be like one of our, major villages that we would just put on the map with folks who are 85 and older. And, with I chose that age because, what do they say now? The 80 is a new 70 or 60 or something. But at a certain point, you lose your, the ability to drive your own car, which is how most people in the county get around. So we, at our board chair's urging, we really had focused some attention on this transportation program. So we formed a committee, a transportation coordinating committee that's been very effective. We had hired a consultant who was working with us, and at that point we had outsourced the service from the county, provided rides to VIP Services, and they're a nonprofit in Elkhorn, have a long track record working with disabled individuals. They had their own transportation program to bring their clients in and to drop their clients off at different places. So it was a logical fit. They, as you mentioned, it's a huge fleet out there, and so they were able to take this on, and I think their service has gotten pretty good reviews for the work that they've done. One exciting add-on for 2017 is a mass transit grant that we got. So heretofore, that transportation has been limited to senior and disabled folks, but that's going to be expanded to all county residents. Again, there's a copay involved with that. It's funded partly by a federal and state grant and partly with local tax dollars, but we'll be rolling out more information about that program as the year winds down here.
I know that's a concern. My favorite Dave Brettle newspaper column of the year has been the one, about three weeks back, September, October, about the ALICE reports, which stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed, A-L-I-C-E, ALICE. The figure that in Walworth County, some of the data that analysis came up with, individual need to earn $25,000, $25,900, a family of four, $58,000. And the reality is there's a lot of people in Walworth County between that federal poverty level of $11,670 and that $23,800 annually just to get by. How can we help those people get around? Because that car is often the difference between getting that second part-time job or being able to switch to that full-time job that comes available. This is a big challenge for the county, isn't
it? Absolutely is. And you probably read these columns closer than my parents do, who are the only other readers. No, there's other folks read it too. But
well, I have a cat who uses up the kitty litter too.
Okay, so I was wondering if there
don't,
is
don't
a
get too big a head on it, Dave.
Wrapping fish or a parakeet or something like that. But no, it is an important topic though, and it kind of ties into the thing that you said at the beginning of the interview, which is a perception of the county is a very diverse county, let's put it that way. And so you have those mansions and you've got farmland and you also have poverty. You know, there's a poverty problem.
You've got the resorts and the people that are maintaining the resorts and washing the dishes and getting the grass cut.
That ALICE project was so interesting to me. That was actually, I really first became aware of it when it's a study that the United Way really at a national level had funded, and it's online if you look at ALICE, and it covers Wisconsin county by county and talks about the group of folks who are above the federal poverty threshold, so they're not defined as being in poverty, but as you stated, you know, the figures for a family of four, for example, that earns $58,836 or less. What was interesting to me is, you know, that the federal threshold hasn't changed since 1974. So, you know, I had said to somebody, well, think about what you were earning in 1974 and how far would that go today? And, you know, they had pointed out, well, a lot of people weren't even employed in 1974, and I'd maybe had a paper route or something. So they kind of looked at it the other way and said, well, what if prices were, you know, at 1974 levels? But however you look at it, it's you know, it's a significant issue, and transportation figures in very important for that group of people. And one of the things or points that I had made with the United Way is that they are some of the organizations that they fund are flexible enough to try to keep people out of poverty, because once you get into poverty, it becomes very difficult to get out. And we will fund millions of dollars of poverty programs. We're really a conduit, our Health and Human Services Department, for some state and federal anti-poverty programs, but many of them require that you impoverish yourself or be in poverty before you can get in the program. So, you know, some people maybe have experience with this where you have to spend down your assets, for example, before you're eligible for the aid. And I understand when, you're administering a big program like this nationwide, you have to have standards and strict standards. But once people have depleted all of their assets and are in that situation, it's very difficult for them to get out. So, you know, where the United Way at least plays into this is that, you know, if your transmission goes out on your car, maybe, you know, there's an agency that they fund that could pay that bill, which makes a difference between showing up at work or not showing up at work and being employed and not being employed. And I think, you know, the point that you make is absolutely true. Public transportation will figure into that, you know, that it might be that people can use that to get to services, to get to employment. So we're excited about that and really looking forward to when that program rolls out.
2 minutes left, lightning round. Are we going to see changes or moves to raise the minimum wage at all? Or is that really problematic when you're structured around a tourist economy and tips and things like
that? Well, that one's probably out of my pay grade because you see, you know, different initiatives. I think at the federal level, I would be surprised, you know, based on who knows what the election is going to bring. But, you know, I don't see that at the state level that would probably increase, and certainly nothing, you know, locally that I think people are proposing.
I think I owe it to our listeners in our last minute, Dave. When last we left last we left our county administrator, who was side by side with the county sheriff on community matters, I confess that I had just gotten what I hoped would be my last traffic ticket. I spend some time driving back and forth between Kenosha and Williamsburg.
This is always my favorite part of the time where you confess to something.
So yes,
Wrapped attention over here.
Yeah, well, my budget was I couldn't afford the ticket, but...